Welcome back, friends, to A Homemaker's Manifesto, the podcast. If you are coming across this podcast somewhere other than my Substack page, I would ask you to please head on over there and subscribe, isaryan.substack.com, or you can just Google A Homemaker's Manifesto on Substack. That is kind of my main base. And today I am really excited to be unveiling kind of a new format. It is a newsletter podcast combo. You can read the newsletter if you like. You can listen to the podcast if that's better. You can get both delivered to your inbox for free. So please subscribe to A Homemaker's Manifesto in your podcast app or with your email, whatever you prefer. And I'm so happy to have you here. You can also follow my work on Instagram at A Homemaker's Manifesto. Wherever you choose to follow me, I'm very happy to have your support. So let's just dive right in. Today we are going to be talking about chastity and singleness. I'm going to be answering some questions for my Dear Help Me advice column. I'm putting column in air quotes because obviously we're getting it in podcast form here. So you can submit questions to me, Dear Help Me. If you are a premium subscriber to my Substack page, what that means basically is Substack creates like a crowdfunding ecosystem for independent writers and creators like myself. That means instead of relying on big tech advertising to support my work, my readers or listeners get to support me directly through Substack. So it's a really, really awesome platform. I'm just seeking free speech and independence. I would love to have you as a supporter. It is just $5 a month or $50 a year. You can just head over to Substack. There's probably going to be a link in the show notes for this description, this episode, depending on where you are listening to it, where you could do that. And you also get access to my book club. We're having a great discussion on Live Not by Lies, the book Live Not by Lies, as well as the book of Ephesians. So you can participate in those discussions, read along with us, submit questions to Dear Help Me, and get access to other exclusive content by becoming a premium subscriber. So thank you so much for that. And for those of you who are premium subscribers, you know I love you. Thank you so much for being here. So let's just dive right in to what I wrote about normalizing chastity. So I saw a post on social media last week that argued that singleness is closer to a curse than a gift. The individual that posted this statement cited Genesis 2:18, which says it is not good for man to dwell alone, as well as Psalm 68:6, which says that God setteth the solitary in families. This is one reason to study the Bible for yourselves, friends, rather than extracting theology from social media, since these verses in no way constitute a biblical argument that singleness is closer to a curse than a gift. After all, such an argument would actually contradict the Holy Writ, and we know that the Holy Writ does not contradict itself. Singleness, as the Apostle Paul and the lives of a litany of great Christian figures throughout history clearly teach us, provides the believer with as much of an opportunity to glorify God as marriage does, if not more. In 1 Corinthians 7, Paul lays out clearly the virtue of both marriage and the chaste unmarried life in a passage that is hardly undermined by the fact that woman was created to provide the perfect companion for man and thus complete the creation of mankind, and a fragment of a verse from a psalm about a God who makes all things right, as the social media post had referenced. The world has glorified the sexually active lifestyle as part of the broader normalization of freedom from historically Christian sexual values. It has rejected not only God's ordination for marriage, but also all forms of moral chastity, which is any lifestyle that excludes sex to the sanctity of marriage and abstains from it in any other form. The chaste single life is a time-honored and very biblical Christian tradition that is, at the very least, the best option for unmarried believers, and is in no way synonymous with the postmodern world's idea of what it means to be single. Far from it. Marriage is a blessed and sacred thing, but all human beings are valuable to God, and all Christians are engaged to be wed to His Son, our bridegroom, the Lord Jesus Christ, for eternity. What's more, it is tone deaf and borderline cruel to discuss singleness in today's present age of moral depravity as though it is an option some ignorantly choose over the supposedly superior virtue of marriage. Eric's tweet ignorantly, ironically, ignores, maybe we could call it ignorant, but I avoided doing so. So this tweet ironically ignores the very value of the verse in Psalms that it cites, which points to God's goodness as giving single people a refuge in a family, as the Church of Christ ought to do to all single people. Modern values didn't invent singleness, but they did invent the kind of culture in which chastity has become to be seen as a defect. So those Christians who remain chaste in singleness rather than disobey their convictions and or marry someone who would not be a suitable spouse deserve our utmost respect and support, not our scorn. If we want to renormalize the classical understanding of chastity, we must accept and appreciate chaste Christian singleness. All right, let's dive into Dear Helpmeet. I'm really excited about this new advice column section of our podcast. Each week, I will be answering anonymous questions from readers about all things relating to homemaking, femininity, and biblical Christian marriage. If you would like to submit a question, again, please upgrade your subscription to paid. And on the post on Substack that this podcast will be posted on, it's the newsletter version of it. You can scroll down to the bottom to access the link to submit questions anonymously to Dear Help Me. All right, let's go to our first question. My best friend is having an emotional affair and asked her husband to leave. She feels she has the right to because the relationship has gotten stale, always arguing, stress of working lots, not spending time together, etc. I'm not sure how to minister to her as she has reached out for a friend. So here's my response to that. It is always challenging to be in the position of having to tell someone else they are making the wrong decision, especially when it has to do with their marriage. I've been in this position and known many others who feel stuck in this position as well. Your friend will ultimately have to make her own choices, but you are in the position to point her towards what is right. It is the most loving thing to do. When you frame this with deep compassion for her suffering, as Christ has for us, you stand the best chance of showing her true Christian love. Sympathize with her desire to be loved and cherished by her husband, and help her to see what she might really want. Try to encourage her to understand that it is not a guarantee she will find what she's looking for in her new emotional entanglement, as she will still be involved, and all couples involve two people. Whether she is receptive to this or not, I would try to prioritize pointing her towards what is right, which would be sound godly counsel in Christ. Two books I would recommend to her in this situation are Marriage by Paul David Tripp and The Empowered Wife by Laura Doyle. While the second book, The Empowered Wife, is not Christian, it might help her to recognize patterns in her own behavior that have compounded problems in her marriage. So our second question, here we go. I tend to be rather driven by my emotions and have a temper, and I've been struggling against these failings as long as I can remember. I tend to get defensive and angry when my husband says anything critical or negative to me. I know he has my best interests at heart, he's wonderful, but in the moment I get so hurt and upset and feel as if I'm being personally attacked. Some of this might stem from some level of self-righteousness where I'm scared to face my faults head on. I know I have all these issues to try to work through, but I feel that I'm hardly doing any better than I was a year ago, despite praying about it and asking forgiveness and trying so hard to stop being so sensitive and harsh. Do you have any advice in tackling my attitude and reining myself into gentle words and thoughts and a submissive heart towards my husband? I do. I am so sorry. I know just what you are going through. You are very gracious to your husband, and it's wonderful that you are so understanding of his intentions. It's also very good that you are so introspective about your own challenges. However, it sounds like you're beating yourself up quite a bit. The phrase "trying so hard" really jumps out at me. You are very aware of your own fallen state, as we all must be for Christ to work in us. Yet we must remember that it is Him who does the work. As long as we are relying on our own power to change, we can often end up frustrated, to say the least. I don't know your heart, but I know in my own case, I tried for years to change myself, praying and being acutely aware of my own unhealthy behavior and patterns, and frequently felt discouraged, as you do. Jesus knows how you feel. Jesus knows so much more. He experienced everything fallen human beings can experience without sinning. That means that you are not standing before him failing to meet his expectations. It means that he is standing before you, ready and willing to heal you. Two books that really helped me dig deep into my soul beyond my behavior and flaring emotions were How People Change by Paul David Tripp and Gentle and Lowly by Dane Ortlund. Yes, I am a big fan of Paul David Tripp. His books are wonderful. I would also take note of your physical health as well. If you do not already, I would make an effort to exercise daily and get as much sunshine as possible. Track your cycle so you can be aware of physical factors that might be behind your temper and strong emotions. If you do not supplement with a magnesium, I would look into this as well. This is a common issue with mood issues with women and just human beings in general. Most of all, stop beating yourself up. Your anger and negative attitude are rooted in wounds that Jesus died to be able to heal for you. His healing is free-flowing and available always, and he loves you right where you're at. I'm praying for you, friend, and I hope you all listening will join me in prayer for this dear sister as well. I'm sure so many of us can just relate deeply to what she is going through. All right, so once again, if you would like to submit your questions to Dear Help Me, go ahead and scroll down to the bottom of the today's newsletter for the link. It's behind the paywall, so if you upgrade, you should have access to that. If you are a premium subscriber, you already do have access to that. Also, I should really mention, if you would like to learn more about my exclusive women's mentorship group for more hands-on support, please head over to liberatedsurrender.substack.com. That is the home base for the mentorship group. You can go ahead and sign up to just get free emails. We send out blog posts. But if you would like to join the community, join our Zoom calls. We have them every other week. And then we have, you know, intimate chat support for any questions, concerns that you might have. You can ask me and my good friend Allison, who is a love and relationship mentor. We are there for you to answer you, talk with you, pray with you, give you advice and counsel. So would love to have you be a member of that community. Head on over to Liberated Surrender to find out more about joining. All right, so finally, just a couple of notes on our book club chat. This is just some thoughts I had on the book club discussion that we are currently having for premium subscribers. Again, you can go over to the post I'm sure I will have all of these links in the show notes of this podcast, so you can go ahead and check out the links just to upgrade your subscription if you would like to join the book club. We're talking about woke capitalism and the new totalitarianism. So this week in our book club, we are continuing our discussion of Rod Dreher's Live Not by Lies. One of the most potent points made in the book is about the rise of woke capitalism and the subtle totalitarianism that the power enjoyed by major corporations imposes upon a free populace like ours. Dreher writes that woke capitalism is now the most transformative agent within the religion of social justice because it unites progressive ideology with the most potent force in American life, consumerism, and making money. On Instagram last week, I wrote a bit about how consumer capitalism, even long before the advent of far-left progressive ideology and social values into the fabric of American culture, began to break down and sell the vital necessities of life piecemeal. You don't have to be a socialist to recognize that capitalism is not inherently virtuous on its own. The values that drive companies and consumers to operate the way they do matter far more than free market capitalism, in my humble opinion. This is why whether or not a people fear the Lord is the most important metric of a moral society. So, what are you reading this week? I would love to hear from you guys. You can go ahead and join in the comments if that's something that you can access from where you're at. I would love to hear what you are reading. This is my question for premium subscribers. So again, there's my pitch to join our community. Would love to have you be a part of it. Personally, this won't be a surprise if you know me well. I am listening to an Agatha Christie novel The Pale Horse. It's probably one of her better known. It is really gripping so far. I'm really enjoying it. I know there was a movie or miniseries made of it recently, so I'm looking forward to watching that. I love Agatha Christie. Went through a huge phase of listening to P.G. Woodhouse, who is an old school British humorist. He writes these kind of funny satirical novels about the British upper classes. I kind of exhausted my access of free Woodhouse audiobooks on Audible, so I've switched over to Agatha Christie. I keep joking, there's this trope, you know, hot girl summer. For me, it's been an Agatha Christie summer. I really love mysteries. You may have heard me talk about this a lot. I used to consider them kind of a guilty pleasure until I realized that they actually really speak to our inherent desire to see justice rot, so to speak, if that's the right word. Me trying to sound fancy there. The Pale Horse actually kind of concerns, jury's still out because I don't know how it ends, but it does concern like the supernatural and ESP and stuff like that. So I'm kind of compelled, especially because Agatha Christie's novels are always, you know, they don't have like magic and the supernatural and everything in them. So I'm really curious where it's going. I'm also listening to a kind of a devotional book called Calm My Anxious Heart by Linda Dillo. It is a kind of a guide to finding contentment for Christian women, and it is so humbling. I feel like when we discuss contentment, it's always so humbling because, you know, we in our culture, even well within Christian culture, we're so prone to validate our discontentment. You know, because again, we see that it's so valid. Oh, of course you want that. Of course you're dissatisfied with the way your life is. It is okay to want good things. And in a way, all of that is true. But the truth is, we are called to contentment in whatever situation we are in. The Apostle Paul wrote us words of admonition in this vein when he was in prison for his faith. And that's where he told us, you know, I've learned to be content in any and all situations. And contentment is not something that is reserved for people with a good life. You can have absolutely miserable circumstances and still find a means of being content. This was, you know, just encouragement I really needed in this season. And it's been so refreshing. One of the things she talks about is, you know, there's like a little parable somebody is, that she knows was told as a young woman, where two women were in a prison. One looked outside and saw mud, and one looked outside and saw stars. And so I keep thinking about that, about looking at the stars. There are always stars to see in our life. There are always blessings and goodness. And something else that we cannot afford to forget is that all things work together for good to those who love God. I recently did a verse map of that passage in my James Method verse mapping journal. If you have not heard of these, they are a really fantastic resource for kind of breaking down a verse and looking at the meaning of each word and cross references and other translations. It's a really, really powerful way to dive into the word. And you can, I'll include a link for that in the show notes, because I do have a code for 10% off if you want to check out the verse mapping journal and other James Method products, which are just wonderful resources for Bible study. But yeah, I was doing a verse map of that passage, and something that really stuck out to me was just when I, you know, dove into the original Greek for the words that were used, it really noted an orchestration. You know, it really pointed to God's sovereignty and authorship in all things, and how, you know, I feel like we often use this passage for it'll all work out in the end, or it's okay, or like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger kind of a thing. But like, God literally takes bad things and makes them good. Like the story of Joseph is one of my favorite in the Old Testament. How a really awful situation God used for good, and for the good of Joseph's brothers, who were the ones who had orchestrated his, you know, bad. They considered killing him, and then they threw him down a well and sold him into slavery. You know, spoiler alert, sorry. And he ended up saving them all from famine because of that. And it was his fear of the Lord, really, his regard for the Lord, that caused him to be such a valuable asset to the people of Egypt, his brothers, and of course himself. And so I think that's just such a good reminder that we can find contentment in all things, not that we, you know, like this sister who wrote in a question about sort of trying so hard to change herself. God will take these challenges that we go through, you know, sometimes our own struggles, our own flaming emotions, our own sense of utter lack of control over ourselves is really going to be something that we can turn around and look at as a gift. You know, I often think of the metaphor of lifting weights. Resistance training works to build muscle because it causes tiny micro tears in your muscles, and then your muscles heal, and that makes them stronger. That's how resistance training works. Because it is hard, it is good for us. And I feel like on that note, I didn't plan to mention this, but I should mention, if you don't know, M is for Mama on Instagram. She is an author. Abby, I actually don't know how to pronounce her last name, so I won't try, but it's written down. You can look her up. She is publishing a book today. I was so honored to get an advanced copy of her book, Hard is Not the Same Thing as Bad. It is a book for mothers to encourage you to this really important mindset shift, that hard is not the same thing as bad. And the gift package that I got with this book, it came with a sticker that says on it, you know, hard, and it the does not equal symbol, bad. Hard is not the same thing as bad. And I cannot tell you, I'm one of these people who carries a Hydro Flask around everywhere, so it's always sitting on my counter, how many times I have been in the middle of, you know, mom life, married life stress, and I look over at that water bottle and it's like, oh, yep, hard is not the same thing as bad. The hard things that we go through, God is using to refine us. So that mindset shift is so valuable, so important. Really looking forward to reading the rest of this book, and I do highly recommend that you go out and order it. Hard is not the same thing as bad. I'm sure it's available in bookstores too. So about wraps it up today. Again, if you would like to join our book club, you can head on over to the pinned post on my page. You will have to upgrade. For the frillionth time, you have to upgrade to access that. I am also planning, this may not be up by the time that you hear this, I'm going to create a tab on the site where all the book club stuff will be, so it's easy for you guys to access. But yes, please join in. I would love to hear how you are enjoying Live Not by Lies and what you're getting out of your Ephesians study. Thank you again so very much for listening and being here with me. Go ahead and, you know, subscribe. All the good stuff. Share, please share. It's really helpful to me. If you recommend my publication, share with other people. That is how we can build the alternative Christian community. Economy, rather, is what I meant to say, but community is a good word too. We cannot be beat down by woke capitalism that does not want to give us a voice. We cannot be beat down by a corrupt capitalist economy that has so many millions of Americans in a stranglehold, where it is so difficult to support our families and live normal, natural, healthy lives. I know it seems so daunting to break out of this beast system, but one step at a time, we can truly, truly do it. I'm rooting for you. We're all in this together. That is what we are all about here at A Homemaker's Manifesto. I should be able to say that if it's my platform. A Homemaker's Manifesto is a manifesto of rebuilding families that fear the Lord and orient their hearts towards Him. So yes, thank you once again for listening, and I will catch you next week with another episode. Take care, friends.